So when you initially write, it's always for you. And when you edit, and especially when you're getting prepared for something like this, you have to keep your audience in mind. And sometimes you can just picture someone from your life as your audience, and that is a really good way to go.
Do you do that? Do you just maybe pick out specific people that you're thinking about when you're writing, or is it always changing?
Yeah, it changes, but I do.
Well, before we have you read this month's selection, can you maybe just give us a little bit of an introduction, or you know, what the audience maybe ought to keep in mind as they hear your words?
Once I read John Updike's poem On Memory, I realized that the format is really perfect to capture the way your mind works. So I used that as the medium, and I was inspired by Jim Morrison's style, and also I'm taking this class on postmodernism, and my teacher is brilliant. She is covering Baudrillard's Simulacra and Simulacrum, and Papula comes from Simulacra by Philip K. Dick, and he's very interesting as well. So I used an excerpt from On a Pale Horse, and it was a blackout poem. So that also touches upon, you know, death and the afterlife. So that goes well with this.
All right. Well, let's have you read Portrait of the Earth.
Earth Portrait. The space my mind occupies, a house with a pale pink rug and soft heat. There's an itch in it. A water moccasin, an oil painting, computers that have the hierarchy of angels, and a globe on a string in a dark room. Let them see fences drawn tightly. Let them walk through sprinklers that start to smell like crab rangoon. Let them see sockeye salmon dyed pink while workers hum show tunes. Let them condemn the wretchedness of bumper stickers and habit, of Hyde and Papula, and the slow blinking cat. Neurons die by the time I order my soup, and yet I'd take my coins from the vase and dip them in clay, waiting. As sweet powder fresh smoke in a ransacked village rises, we all make crude remarks about the living days and everything in between. We want to fall, to join the nuns of the playground, the men by the bus stop howling, the armed guards and secretaries of the planet, to feel amused once more. Death is darkness with a made-up name. It's a classroom where we steal each other's memories. We are all in a hall with letters on our doors, like singers at the end of a show, where visits are possible, but it doesn't occur to us through the brick and our gumball machines, our desperate posters, like a cheap college town. Our shows don't make sense, but our letters would, if we cared enough to write them, while people put roses across a fresh, perfumed grave.
It's a great piece there. You'd mentioned some of the, I guess, literary allusions that are in the poem. I kind of noticed a good bit of sci-fi in there as well. Is that a genre you prefer?
Yeah, I really like it. A lot of the book ideas I have are actually sci-fi, but they're from a long time ago. But I feel like it's really important. It's a really important genre, and it's getting respected more and more.
And I know this poem also, we talked about this the last time, you kind of tend towards not shying away from heavy topics, sometimes, you know, what some people might even characterize as dark, you know, and a good bit of sort of discussion and contemplation about death, or if not death, then whatever comes next.
The best way to look at that is just life, I guess. But I'm not religious and I don't necessarily believe in an afterlife, but if there is, I feel like it's not your traditional heaven and hell. I feel like it's just you living with yourself, like your subconscious being released or something. Or even now with technology and social media and everything, part of you may be able to be recorded, you know?
Mm-hmm. And also with this poem, you know, if folks go to the website, wgcu.org, and you find the Versed in Florida page, we'll, of course, have the poem there so folks can read it for themselves. And they'll see there's images interspersed in there, the one of the coin and then the one of the page from On a Pale Horse that's been heavily redacted. Can you tell me a bit about that choice, perhaps stylistically, and perhaps what that adds?
So, again, that's borrowed from John Updike's On Memory. And the coin is actually, when I did theater for one play in high school, we had a contest about meditation. And they would go around and try to get us to laugh. And they said there was going to be a prize for the last person standing. And that was me, so he just pulled out a coin out of his pocket. But it was actually a really cool experience because everyone was impressed with how, like, lost I was in my thoughts and how I was able to disconnect.
All right. Was it that same coin, the one that is we see the image of?
I think so, because in, like, a box under my bed, it's just a bunch of stuff, like keepsakes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So probably.
And before we let you go, I wanted to make another correction as well. The last time we featured your work, you had not been published at that time. But in fact, now the poem that you read for us back in January has been published.
Yeah, it's all about finding the right place and submitting at the right time. It's a really good literary journal, and it was for undergrads. So I feel like that gave me a little bit of leverage.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much again for coming back in, and we look forward to hearing your work again next month.
Thank you.